CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, it's Monday. Made it through the weekend. Congratulations. What do you want, a gold star for making it through the weekend?
Those are reserved for making it through a week.
Yes. Very nice, chilled weekend, mostly, for me. How about you? Anything fun?
Oh, everything's back to normal, business-wise, so...
Yeah. You can see by the amount of traffic there is on the roads. I totally miscalculated this morning. I thought, well, I'll leave at the normal time, which had become like normal holiday time. Jesus. I felt like I was in New York suddenly.
Yeah, it's all back up and going.
The highway was just crazy. So if you are taking to the road for the first time this morning and expecting everything to be as it was during the holidays, I've got bad news. You're going to be stuck for long-ass time. Yeah. Anyway, so how was everybody's weekend? Anything fun happen?
No, just very, very chilled. Spend some time with some family and some friends. And my cousins and siblings and I have just come to the realization that we have a typical show-offy aunt in the family.
A show-offy aunt? What do you mean?
She has a new home, and that was the guise that she gave us to inviting us to her new home.
Oh.
And then her daughter's just started high school at a very prestigious high school, so she name dropped that at least 3 different times.
Oh, she's one of those.
Very show-offy, right, yes. Okay, all right. And then her other son has just started hip-hop lessons, so of course we had to clear the way for him every time music came on.
Oh no, did he dance?
All the time.
Oh no, that's so awkward.
And it was, this is how we first realized that she's show-offy. In the new house, we could, you know how people congregate in a place and you just, you know, you're all, for example, in the lounge and that's where everyone chills and that's where we're eating and having great conversation. She was plonking us around different parts of the house every like 30 minutes. She'd go, actually, no, let's take it outside to the bar. Let's go to the bar, everyone. And then I was like, okay. And we hobble along. Then she goes, I think let's just open up the sliding doors. Maybe like you guys can go and dip into the pool if you want to. And it's like, okay. And she goes,
oh, this is irritating.
That's annoying.
I know exactly the kind of person you're talking about now. We all know someone.
Oh, my gosh. Then she goes, actually, she calls her help. She says, can you give us some throws? It's getting a little chilly now. Can you give us some throws from the other lounge? It's like, okay, we get it. You have 3 lounges. You have an inside bar. You have an outside bar. It is fine. But it's like, we live there going,
is she married?
Yes. So I know it's like
who's the big earner here that's allowed all of this?
If I had to like analyze it properly, he is, so her husband. But you know, I think this is kind of like the life of her dreams, because now she has,
well, good for her.
She kind of just wants to be a housewife and the kids and the drive the mommy car. And
is she one of those people who thinks being a mom's a full-time job? Is it one of those, like,
no. It's just about the comfort and the money. Yeah. That's all it is.
You know, it's so interesting that people like that are they're almost self-unaware in some ways, because you know, a couple of months, maybe years ago, when she wasn't like in the money, she wasn't doing this stuff. She wasn't inviting you around to a much smaller house and showing you her non-existent pool and clearing a space for her son to do what he wasn't doing at that stage, which was hip-hop lessons, because he was just an ordinary kid like everybody else. It's amazing to me how people forget that some of us can remember what was there before, and that it might not stay that way as well. And they become, you see it all. It's like there's this consumerism. And listen, we're all prey to it at some level. But some people are just really bad at being, you know, seeing it in context. They're like, I have money. I'm going to buy myself this bag, or I'm going to buy myself that shirt, or I'm going to buy myself these shoes, or this car, if you're talking. And then beyond car, it's house. And then beyond house, it's holidays, and
there's
always something new, right? And then it's yachts and planes. But the fact is, like, that stuff can go away just as quickly.
100%. You know what it's like, Gareth? It's like when someone's single and then they get a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Have you ever seen how people change it up then? Oh. It's like, guys, if you want to grow up, once you get a woman, trust me, you become a man. It just changes you.
Or children.
Leanne used
to refer to the married people too, because that happens to them. And they she calls them smug marrieds. And they're still like that. I mean, smug married, smug riches, smug children's.
Smug children's.
It's people who have all of those things and then make it that the defining aspect of their life, which they then use to kind of position themselves as being some kind of authority on the universe. You know, some rich people are not nice people. They're not brilliant people. They're not clever people. They just made money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can make money. I mean, thieves can make money. Mm. So being rich is not an estimation of someone's value as a person. Neither is whether they have children or not, because you could have horrible children. Mm. Who are dreadful and everybody hates.
Yeah. You could have 12 children if you wanted to.
Exactly. It's biology. It doesn't take rocket science to make that happen. In fact, I know a lot of really, really awful people who should not have had children who did. And I know some very nice people I wish would have children and haven't. Mm-hmm. And then the marrieds. And then the ones in relationships, like Mbulelo is saying now. And now, thanks to social media, these people are magnified in their irritation 20 times more than they would have been before.
Yeah,
I just think I just thought it was so lost on us. It's like, you know, if you're showing off to your friends, maybe who you've been competing with for a long time, sure, we are family.
It's hilarious.
We're just here for the free food, to gossip about some other people, to have a good time and a laugh and to leave. So, that was my weekend in a nutshell.
Listen, I see everybody going crazy about this poor kid who drowned. You know, there was this school trip, apparently.
Yeah.
And this
Boys High.
Yeah, this little boy was in the in these boats or in these rafts or whatever it might have been with a bunch of other kids, and he fell off and he couldn't swim, and he drowned. And it's an awful, tragic, horrible story. And I see people just losing their minds about it. Like, oh my God, the school's so irresponsible. And oh my God, this and oh my God, that. And I saw the mother on TV last night. And
oh no.
Yeah, it's just all, you know, this is social media. That's what this is. It's an awful situation. And I am as disturbed by the fact that there was a lack of any kind of safety precaution taken for this kid. You know, and also, I think if parents have, as a parent, you almost have a responsibility to make sure that your child can swim. If your kid cannot swim by the age of 10, I'm afraid you have failed at parenting. That's number one.
There's no way you should send your kid on a water-based excursion.
Right, right. Nobody ever blames the parents. They go straight to the school. Now, I understand the school has a huge responsibility here too. And whoever was running that trip, whichever teacher it was, they must be absolutely riddled with guilt. But there are various components that come into this. Number one, the kid should have said, hey, guys, listen, I can't swim. Right, because even if you are a very shy little child and there's a lot of pressure on you and all the rest of it, this is life or death. So you need to be able to speak up and say, I can't swim. Then the teacher can make appropriate arrangements. Second of all, the teacher should ask, are there any of you who can't swim? Then we're not doing this for you. And you know, then there are going to be people who say, but you've got to include the kid even if he can't. No, you don't. You keep him out because you don't want to be responsible for him, something horrible happening to him. Number three is the parents should make sure that by age 10, every child that they have can swim. That is, there are swimming lessons. I see posters up all over the bloody place, people giving swimming lessons. Mm. So that should be happening.
There's so many things that could have gone right in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many safety mechanisms in place that could have possibly been there.
Right.
That weren't.
Well, I feel that it's a real tragedy. This poor little boy, I mean, it's just... it's a horrible thing to deal with.
Then you read that he was so excited the night before the trip he didn't sleep. Ugh, and it just tugs at your heartstrings.
So I see now, that's all, you know, what we've just said now is perfectly sensible, and in an ideal world, these are things that would happen that could prevent something like this taking place. But the reaction on social media is just unbelievable. Again, people who have nothing to do with this scenario, all climbing in. teeth and claws and everything else. Then they want this. They, I don't know if they want to go to, what's the school? Parktown Boys? Mm-hmm. I don't know. They want to burn it down, or because you look at social media, it's like there are people that are just furious at an institution. An institution? Really, there are lots of people here who could be blamed, but it's a horrible accident. Mm.
But also, and does your opinion count, really?
No. And accidents happen. And the fact that there's such outrage about this is just unbelievable to me. It's completely out of context.
I'm trying to formulate a concise way of explaining how I feel about this, but I just feel like everyone gets, for lack of a better term, so carried away with things these days.
Here's the thing.
And I just don't understand.
I think it's got to do with maybe with Schadenfreude, and that's the feeling that you have when something terrible happens to someone else, and you go, at least there by the grace of God goes mm-hmm. I, you know. It's almost like you take a little bit of pleasure in someone else's pain because it didn't happen to you. Because there's partly that. I'm trying to explain it to myself psychologically.
I don't get it.
Why a bunch of people who don't know the kid, who don't know the mom, who don't know the school, who don't know the teacher, who don't know anything, are suddenly expressing themselves. Really?
It's like being forced to be at the dinner table of everyone in your neighborhood and listening to their horrible conversations.
Not being forcing yourself into the dining room of everybody in your neighborhood at dinner time, yes. whether they like it or not, and then taking over the conversation and making it all about you.
Mm.
Because I don't understand why everyone feels the need to chip in and add to things. If you aren't adding constructively to something, in my mind at least, I ask, why then are you saying anything? I saw one of the big articles around the story that was making the rounds being the fact that the family couldn't afford a life jacket. I found that a little cringeworthy because what does it actually add to the story?
Nothing.
Except but humiliates the family.
Did any of the other kids have a life? No, but if your kid's going to Parktown Boys, I'm pretty sure that they will make sure that there's a life jacket. And if they didn't, then the school's in dereliction of duty. Plus, why bring that up in any...
What does that have to do
I'll tell
with
you
the
why.
Story?
Because some cheap reporter who's being paid, I don't know, 3,000 rand a month maximum, right? A reporter, and they're getting that a month, and that's because they're working at a newspaper, and they've probably been there for like 5 years already. They are looking for a reason to make this about rich and poor. That's what they're trying to do. They see Parktown Boys because maybe they just went to some Model C school nearby them and they're like, let's nail rich people. That's a way we'll take this child's death and turn it into a cudgel for nailing people who have provided for their child's education. Not necessarily rich kids or rich parents, but people who've saved, perhaps. People who make huge sacrifices. Maybe they're doing two jobs at the same time. We're gonna nail those people because they went to Parktown Boys. They would never bring this up if it was just the little school down the road that, you know, has a little bit of government funding and maybe the teachers there are part-time. Who knows? They're not going to go after that school.
Yeah.
That's what this is partly. There's such a resentment and a bitterness in some people. There really is. And then that they find that their excuse to jump in. Anyway, I just thought we'd mention it because we didn't talk about the story yesterday, and I saw it kind of breaking
we
up.
We weren't here yesterday.
Over the weekend. I mean, Friday.
It broke on Friday afternoon, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, that this is something that, again, shows you how horrible social media is and how unhelpful, as Sia said, it doesn't add value. It doesn't. You're not improving anything. Right?
No, it's shocking, and you know, it's a pity that everyone's after the shock headline, when actually this is a very deep philosophical problem. It's called virtuism. What we're seeing is people displaying a sense of virtuism, and where it's a disaster, and I hate to bring it up again, it sounds like I'm always going on about it, is it's so deeply woven into our programming from young. It's kind of a Judeo-Christian model of virtuism. We always want to pander to this. And in a tragedy like this, is first and foremost, can we just respect that a mother just lost their child? As Sia said, if you're not adding anything, shut the hell up. Seriously, shut the hell up. And your virtuism, you're not a better person because you're putting out 140 letters on
Twitter.
See,
this is it's maybe mental. And you bring up like Judeo-Christian history and virtuism and all the rest of it. Maybe it reminds me of when people, and there's the scene in Monty Python, Life of Brian, where they all go to stoning. And you buy a packet of gravel if you've got a little bit of money, and you get bigger rocks if you have more money.
Oh, goodness.
You can throw them at the adulterer or whoever it is that's being, you know, what was his name?
It's so good.
Son of Deuteronomy of Gath. And this guy is like, I didn't do anything. And they go, you're a blasphemer. And they all start gathering around him, and then everyone can throw a rock. And it's a whole bunch of women wearing beards because women weren't allowed to take part in stonings, but they loved it just as much as the men.
All I said was the halibut was fit for.
Yeah, Jehovah. And then they all start throwing rocks at the guy who's... Anyway, you've seen the scene. It's just hilarious because it shows you like all these people aren't actually that interested in the crime being committed. They aren't actually interested in the person who's committed the crime that much, or the victim, if there is a victim. What they're interested in is showing everybody else they're better and having a little bit of revenge.
Yeah. It's a yearning for what they call piety. And it's revolting. It's revolting.
All right, a couple of messages on this, because the Parktown Boys issue is so crazy on social media. Now there's a conspiracy that it was an initiation gone wrong. People are bored, I swear, I hate it.
What?
Hmm.
The guy's from Congo, from what the article says.
What? Enoch?
Is it Mbianzini's family hailed from the Democratic Republic of Congo? I'm reading on the Sunday Times Live.
Well, I don't think it's... Look, I wouldn't pass off the whole initiation thing because we've had these conversations before. And even just when this story came up, I remember my... orientation at high school. And
sorry, do we mean school? Sorry, school orientation. All right, sorry.
Yeah, so...
Orientation as opposed to initiation.
Okay.
It's the same, it's the right sort of age, 13.
Oh, yes.
And it's the right time of year.
Oh, believe you me, it's a...
Well, it's also called like initiation, yeah, when you're getting into school and whatnot. Mm. But we went to a camp as well, and it was the whole grade that had to go out into the middle of a dam. And they were like, you know, well, this is to teach you how to be together. This is the brotherhood. And it's like, anybody got time for that? And they were like, essentially, all of us had to swim into the middle of a dam, form a link, so form a circle in the middle of the dam, sing the school song, and then swim back to shore. And they just said to anyone who is uncomfortable swimming, there's only one raft in between... 130 boys. So that's like, yeah, that's also meant to teach you to share
I gotta say, like, that stuff's just stupid. There are people who like the tradition and who think all of that is part of the school's culture and all that shit. Listen, we've seen too much on the bad side of that to just be justifiable. Now in 2020 is ridiculous.
Do you think at that age, if you couldn't swim, you would have said something, or would you have felt the pressure to just go in?
I wouldn't have.
You wouldn't have said
there were anything. A lot of things, not to bring a wah 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 moment to things, but there were a lot of things I found that I did in high school because I was like, how dare I speak out? And I'm going to be the only one who speaks out. So I'm not saying it necessarily is the reason why this unfortunate incident happened, but...
Yeah.
Well, I think it also comes from, and I think maybe part of this virtuism and this search for piety, as Mbulelo said it is, and there's just this noise that you hear from ordinary members of the public is partly as a result of the fact that there is no sense of personal responsibility anymore in South Africa. I saw that the NPA have decided that there isn't enough evidence to prosecute Redani Mahlangu about Life Estimeni.
Now, not enough
evidence. There's not enough evidence. The bodies are piled high. A lot of these people have been buried for over a year, 2 years now. These people were killed negligently because of the decisions, which there's a direct line of causation and causality between the politician called Redani Mahlangu, the then MEC for Health in Gauteng, and what happened in the Life Estimeni case and these patients' deaths. There's a direct line. What evidence is missing, Shamila Batoy? You should be ashamed of yourself. Ashamed. I know I keep going on about this because I'm a broken record in this Life Estimeni. I don't have a relative who was involved here, because people immediately think you must be subjectively involved. I'm not. I hate this story. These were people who had no idea of... I mean, a lot of them were severely intellectually disabled, mentally ill, not happy people. There was no way that they could have figured the world out themselves. Mm. They were entirely dependent on everyone else. And in this case, on the state. And let me reiterate, for those people who are big fans of the government and of giving government more control and the NHI and all of that stuff, let me point out that it's not just that they mismanage and steal every cent out of companies like Eskom and degrade them to the point where they can't even do their duty to keep the lights on. It's not just money. They actually kill people. And if you believe that the government is the best custodian of you, your children, your welfare, your future, your opportunities, your responsibilities, let me give you the ugliest case in the last 5 years, which is this life estimating one. Zero people have gone to jail. There are 140 people dead. These people were completely and wholly dependent on the state for care. No one else could help them. And what did the state do? It didn't just not help them. It actively found a way to make them die faster. Mm. This is not funny. It is not clever. It is not interesting. It is not fun to talk about on a Monday morning. First thing, and I know I'm a little bit obsessed with this story. I haven't shut up about it for 2 years, but it drives me mad. And now they don't have enough evidence. Do me a favor.
Well, sickening. When you can make the guy president, our current president, we know the absolute atrocity his fingerprints are all over at
Marikana.
So when you can allow that type of person to get to the very top, Gareth, tragically, I don't know why people have any faith in anything called South African politicians.
I agree with you, and it's kind of upsetting. Let's talk about something far more interesting. Leanne has decided that this morning, and from now on, she's going to be called Leanne Pansegrove.
Yes.
She's decided that's the surname for her.
Yeah, I'm totally with this.
Any reason? I mean, you're not marrying a Pansegrove.
No, I saw the name.
Yeah, and you just fell in love.
And I thought it was so nice. You know, I'm tired of mole. It's three letters.
Yeah.
It's
sounds like you've made it up.
It sounds like I made it up. Everyone says, is it like the animal? And yes, it is. That's what it means.
Because it rhymes with hole. People go, the asshole.
Yeah,
and
all
you're
of
just
that.
Sick of that.
So, I think if I go with Pansegro,
yes,
nobody can rip me off for that.
Yes.
It's original. Yes. It rolls off the back of the throat.
Have you already booked the social media ones?
Oh, I should.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I should do. That's my next step.
It rolls off
the back of the throat.
Pansegrove. That's nice.
It's going to open new doors for you.
The only thing I can think of is that people will say, it sounds like your pants will grow. But I'm willing, you know, sticks
that's
and stones.
That's not so bad.
No.
Those are people who are just not in the know.
Exactly.
Great article that I read in the Mail Online. Listen to this. I'll give you the first couple of lines. And don't forget, we've got, because it's Monday, Anthea's popping in with the money shot. We're going to be doing another episode in our series with Henley Business School on all of their interesting students, their alumni, people who've done their MBAs and are doing their MBAs through Henley. And this morning we will be meeting yet another, a guy called Barry Funsale. And Barry has a really interesting story. He's a tremendous musician. He's worked with some unbelievably talented people. He himself is tremendously talented, and he's got a story too. Another unconventional person doing an MBA, someone you wouldn't expect to be. And we thought we'd catch up with him this morning too. So that's coming right up. But listen to this quickly. Have your children got eco-anxiety? How would you know if they had? According to a variety of psychologists and psychiatrists, talk of a climate crisis has led to an upsurge in young people reporting feelings of anxiety, helplessness, and guilt. The symptoms of this newly coined syndrome are real enough, according to the Royal College of Psychiatrists, and why wouldn't they be in a world pumped full of one-sided propaganda? We saw this over Christmas when Channel 4 screened a special edition of Gogglebox called Goggle Sprogs, which featured viewers as young as six. The children were shown watching as the BBC parroted untrue claims by Extinction Rebellion that scientists say we only have 11 years to act and their response was all too understandable. One child looked especially pained as she counted on her fingers how many years she had left to live.
Aww.
And worked out that, according to the BBC, the world could end when she was just 19.
I mean, you're not telling stories here like fairy tales and you know, kids know that they're just stories. You're messing with their concept of their lives.
Yeah.
This is huge to them. It's life and death.
And if you want to have a fun day, or maybe you're bored today at work, maybe there's still not enough to do, hop onto YouTube and type in Extinction Rebellion and see the kind of people who put on these bizarre performances in the streets of London, wearing really outrageous outfits, and they want us to take them seriously. But they're lunatics. These people clearly have, all of them, severe mental health
problems. It's like
problems.
The guys in America with the end is nigh posters.
Those guys at least shut up or just shout from their soapbox and don't. These ones dance, roll around on the floor, they set things on fire, they scream at passers-by, and they're actually, it's like suddenly releasing the asylum out onto the streets.
Weird.
And then they all find each other and make up a group.
A band.
Yeah, and they go around terrorizing people. Later, a little boy reacted to fanatical claims of Extinction Rebellion by saying to the viewers, "That's sad. Why did we have to be born at this time?" They're growing up in a world where Greta Thunberg is preaching her gospel of imminent hellfire in which world leaders queue up to approve of her message. Now, again, this all speaks into what I said the other day, that the reason I am turning into one of these, in inverted commas, climate change deniers is because I'm so sick of this religiosity that's going on the side of people like the Extinction Rebellion crowd, for example. And it's happening in this country too. You hear people just bring up, like, someone who's got nothing to do with climate, any scientific field whatsoever, suddenly starts sprouting forth at a dinner party or at a braai or whatever, like, "Oh my god, we've only got 12 years left to live." You're a moron. Shut up. Stop it. What's wrong with
you? You haven't even read into it.
But it's like those people who used to come up to you, like Christians who would come up to you when you were a kid or at school or whatever. There was always one kid whose parents were like, I don't know, in some charismatic church or whatever, and they'd start coming up to other kids who didn't have anything to do with that, saying, "You definitely are going to burn in hell, and I'm going to tell you why." And you think, why would you do that to another child? And the reason is because you're into the religion, and it part of the reason it catches on is because there's drama and there's a severe consequence, hellfire. You know, that's why this story of, like, we've got 12 years to live on Earth. Now, when we are here in 14 years from now and the poles are still iced over and there are still glaciers all over, and the sea levels have not risen so that Venice and Florida are completely underwater, and everything is pretty much like it is now, everyone will go, "Well, it's another 5 years and then it'll be happening." Yeah. But it never does.
We saved 5 years by not using plastic straws.
Right. Go and look at the headlines from The Guardian in like 1976, before any of us were born, and these predictions were there. The world is fucked. We're all going to die. All of this is what preachers have used for thousands of years to corral people into their churches. Because if you fear, this is also how newspapers work, then you pay attention and you go, oh, it switches on that part of your brain which is all about survival. And suddenly you're going, oh shit, I better know all that I can about this. You don't question whether or not it's actually true. And once it's happened, like those people who predict that there's a meteorite coming and it's going to take us out, and then when it doesn't come, nobody goes back to them afterwards and says, "Hey, how about you explain why you got everyone in the town afraid for no good reason?" There's a story about a town in America somewhere where there was a dam that supposedly was going to burst. The dam wall was going to break. And there was such a rumor spread through the town about this dam and how dangerous this dam was, that one day a man, he dropped something and it rolled down there, and he started running after this thing. And someone saw him running and they started running. And before you knew it, like, the whole fucking town was running. They had no idea why. And they were all running out of town. And it was because they all suddenly started to believe that the dam was going. Of course, the dam didn't break. Everything was fine. Everybody went back to their normal life about 5 minutes afterwards. But for a moment there, they were all gripped in the panic. They were all running away from the dam that had supposedly broken. And this is a true story. You can go read about it in papers. And they're still very embarrassed about it now. If you go to the town and you bring it up, people are like very sheepish. And
well, they were like sheep, literally.
That's it.
Or guinea fowl.
And you can see this too in a shopping mall in South Africa. For example, one person just starts screaming and running. Then everybody will start screaming and running.
Yeah, but I'm that person.
Yeah.
I'd rather be the fool who's screaming and running than, you know, courageous and dead.
I don't go with a crowd, though. I'll
sometimes
get out of the way.
Plane trips are so bad. I'm just waiting for one person to go, oh my god, because then I'll be like, we're dying. So that's all I wanted to say.
So this is just part of the hysteria. People are just looking for some. And also, I think a lot of people in the first world are very bored.
Yeah,
they don't have enough to do. They don't have enough real challenges. They don't. They wake up in the morning. They've got very boring lives, very boring jobs. They're into routine. They don't have a thing that motivates them and makes them excited about being alive. And
yeah, Gareth, if we could actually slow down with people like Greta Thunberg and having an adult conversation what the real problem is. Mm. So this really, really old Greek guy told us about it. His name was Socrates, a really long time ago. And he said to all of us, you know, that he even proposed voting should be a lottery back then. And I don't want to get into why he said that. But he said it because the most dangerous thing he could see coming was this thing called idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with Greta Thunberg and people like that is once you idolize people, they go beyond reproach. So even if, let's say, she's talking hogwash, there's a power to her and she's leading another generation down, I don't know, this mental loop. So we cannot get into a stage where we don't call her out because of idolatry. Well, that's madness.
I don't want to call her out. Let's call out the people who've already got it wrong, and then we've got to get to the five things. But remember Al Gore?
I would remember him.
Remember Al Gore? He wrote An Inconvenient Truth. The former vice president who lost to George W. Bush in 2000. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, he said the polar ice caps would have melted away completely by 2013. Well, tick fucking tock. It's 2020. 7 years have passed since.
No, but he'll
we're meant
say
to have run out of polar ice.
We changed our ways. That's why we bought ourselves extra years.
The Prince of Wales, Charles, said that we were coming to the end of our days a full 11 years ago. Those 11 years came and went, and we're still here. So I just feel like people have got to calm down.
Mm.
Stop doing this, because you see the real reaction of children, and you're frightening kids. And if you are the kind of adult who takes pleasure in frightening children, you're a sick individual. And the rest of us don't want you in society talking through microphones or on loudhailers or at protests or in activist circles.
Or on social media.
Go and read the story about the guy who started Greenpeace and how he's turned his back on it. Because it's a religion. I'm telling you, this is the new religion.
Hmm.
This climate change.
Why does no one ever want to hear from scientists? It's always a documentary with Leonardo DiCaprio as the voiceover.
Right, celebrities and politicians.
It's madness.
Yeah. It is. It's celebrities and politicians. So, because scientists are just too boring, and to have to actually pore over the detail would just be too much work for most people.
You just boiled it all down. A documentary with a Leonardo DiCaprio voiceover.
Like,
and in my head, I was actually ticking all of them off. I'm like, yeah, the 11th hour.
Does that exist? I'm pretty sure that must exist.
So a 6-year-old Eastern Cape boy in the five things you need to know this morning was reported missing on Monday. He's been found alive and unhurt, but in a weak state. Police spokesperson Brigadier Teminkwosa Kinana said the boy was found late on Friday afternoon in an open field in a valley. He was rushed to a nearby hospital for medical examination. He's expected to be reunited with his family once he's discharged from hospital. The boy was reported missing on Monday at 5 p.m. from his home in Bakuba administrative area. The police, in concert with local authorities and communities, immediately started the search. A police helicopter, canine and mounted units, as well as other forces, had been deployed to search for the child. After a lengthy and intensive search, the boy was found at 5 p.m. on Friday, unhurt, alive, but looking weak.
Jeez, he'd probably just taken a really long walk, started and just didn't stop.
I highly doubt that, Leanne.
Do you think someone took him?
I'm glad they found him.
I don't know.
I'm just glad they found the kid, but that's a very strange story. How does a kid just disappear? How does he just... I know children do wonder.
Yeah, and they walk, they leave home with their, like I did.
Wait, what?
With a suitcase with just a teddy bear in it.
No, well, you were running away from home, clearly.
Started walking, yeah. Yeah.
How far did you get?
Around the corner, because it started raining. My dad fetched me with an umbrella.
Did he hit you?
No.
Yeah.
But my mom did say, what were you going to do with a teddy bear in your... Yeah.
Facebook had to apologize on Saturday and blamed a technical error for Chinese leader Xi Jinping's name appearing as Mr. Shithole in posts on its platform when translated into English from Burmese.
Oh, my God.
I love this. Facebook having to apologize to China. And also, you know, fuck Xi Jinping, actually, as far as I'm concerned. You can be called Mr. Shithole from time to time, like any other leader in the world.
The irony is, isn't Mark Zuckerberg married to a Chinese lady?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's a great story.
The error came to light on the second day of a visit by the president to the Southeast Asian country, where Xi and State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi signed documents of agreements covering massive Beijing-backed infrastructure plans. A statement about the visit published on Aung San Suu Kyi's official Facebook page was littered with references to Mr. Shithole when translated into English, while a headline in the local news journal appeared as Dinner Honors President Shithole. That's so funny.
We need to tell him that it's not all that bad. We've been called a shithole country.
Yeah.
Take it as a badge of honor.
But also, I mean, like, leaders must just really understand that the world where they were automatically given respect just because they occupied a position is gone.
I'm sure he took it so personally, though.
Oh, hugely. This is the height. They'll probably withdraw all their infrastructure money now. You never know.
This is when Mark will actually flaunt his Chinese wife. Yes, Ms. Chan.
Mexican troops blocked some 1,500 Central American migrants from entering the country of Guatemala, scuffling with them and thwarting their hoped-for trek to the U.S. and a better life. One National Guard soldier standing guard at a bridge that is a major crossing point and speaking over bullhorn told the travelers they could not enter without a visa or migration documents and that sneaking in was dangerous. Now, again, we have lots of people in the world who think that open borders are a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
This is clearly evidence that people like Donald Trump are not paranoid lunatics, and people who are against illegal immigration in the U.S. have a justifiable concern. Here are 1,500 people who are walking through Central America, crossing borders without any documents, hoping eventually to get to the United States. By the way, they're not stopping in really marvelous countries that are not at all shitholes, because they want to stay in the paradise that is Mexico or Guatemala or Honduras. I wonder why. Why would they be going to America? Because it's such an evil place. Why would they be doing that? Let's think about that. The traffic is always in, never out. I don't see anybody hopping on life rafts and trying to swim to Cuba. Do you? I wonder why. It's so bizarre. Maybe someone will eventually figure it out. But I'm not going to. I'm not clever enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they stopped these people and said to them, sorry, no pepa, no come in here. And they've all been turned back.
Is that a quote in the story?
No pepper not coming here.
Exactly. It's in the spelling.
There's an Italian guy at the border there.
Yeah. Then there was an interesting thing yesterday. SpaceX, on Sunday, simulated its emergency abort system on an unmanned spacecraft, the last major test before it plans to send NASA astronauts to the International Space Station. Now, this is great because it's a private company doing this. The space company of entrepreneur Elon Musk was under contract with NASA and will launch its Crew Dragon capsule from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. That was actually launched yesterday. The test would check the capsule's ability to reliably carry crew to safety in the event of an emergency on ascent. And it actually all went well, which is very good news, because SpaceX have screwed up a couple of times, but that happens when you're trying to do things. Nobody's been killed. And this was one of the final safety tests that they had to do. It's really cool to watch. If you watch it, you can see as it jettisons the actual Dragon capsule away, there's an explosion as the rocket turns out to the side and loses its direction. It's very, very cool to watch. So if you're interested in that stuff, there is a cool story too. And then one last thing from China. They reported 4 more cases of pneumonia believed to be caused by a new coronavirus strain, causing rising concern globally that a disease health officials do not yet fully understand or comprehend could spread during a key holiday period. The new virus, which was discovered in the central Chinese city of Wuhan, belongs in the large family of coronaviruses that include severe acute respiratory syndrome, which was SARS, remember that, which killed nearly 800 people globally during a 2002-03 outbreak that also started.
So wearing a mask is not just a fashion statement.
No, it's probably a good idea. But these are four cases. They may be able to get it under control sooner or later.
Sure.
But it is making medical professionals a little bit nervous. So that's all you need to know this morning, the five things. And it's time for Anthea to give us the latest in the money shot this morning. Anthea pops in every now and then to tell us what's going on in the markets, to tell us what's happening with our money, to tell us whether our money's growing or going backwards, and to talk about things like this week, interest rates. But I know you only come for the music, so here it is. This is the reason most people wake up on a Monday to hear Anthea.
Oh.
Just want to hear her theme song.
Do the theme tune, sing the theme tune.
She was high for the money, so high for it, honey. She was high for the money, so you better treat her right.
Right, very nice, Anthea.
Leanne, you
yet
did such
version.
A great job on this, Leanne.
Very nice. Isn't that nice, Anthea?
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leanne. That was great.
All right. So what's happening?
So some great news today. Mm-hmm. We've got last week the Reserve Bank lowered the interest rate. Yay.
Yay, that is good
by
news.
By only 0.25%, but at least I think it's the right trajectory. And so many people said, so were you expecting it? I was like, I was hoping for it. But then I've been hoping for it for the last year. The repo rate is now 6.25%. So that's kind of the rate, the base rate, if you like. And then prime rate is what the banks charge us, 9.75%. So your mortgage is now cheaper.
Now, this is good news, but it's also maybe just, you know, it's almost like a panacea, because what might happen if we get downgraded and if this is the year where it all becomes very difficult.
Thank
for South
you, Lisetta.
Africa.
You sound like Lisetta now.
Yeah, then at least we're giving people a little bit of a break before that happens.
Well,
but
no,
they could
so
have
the
made
Reserve
it.
Bank,
did they have to make it 0.25? I mean, really, you know, like these are such minuscule things. Couldn't they have just gone 0.5% or 1%?
I also asked that question. Like, really? What's with this 0.25% faffing around here and there? Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure it's going to make that much difference, to be honest. But what you were saying about the concerns about the downgrade, that's the excuse the Reserve Bank has been using, right? They say, no, when the downgrade happens, we want a stronger currency, and therefore we can't cut rates, even though there is no GDP growth. And by the way, they did revise GDP growth down to 0.4%, same as the World Bank for this year. So that's a concern. They did say that inflation would remain this year at 4.1%. So inflation's not the problem. We don't have growth. And we all know, and I sound like a stuck record when I say it, the Reserve Bank's mandate is to maintain inflation, not to create GDP growth. But also, 60% of our economy is driven by consumer spending. And if the consumer has more money in their pocket, they will go out and spend. So I'm not sure that you're going to feel like you've got more money in your pocket with 0.25% rate cut, actually.
No, probably not going to make very much difference. But nonetheless, it's a move in the right direction and something that you've been calling for a long time.
Exactly. That's true.
All right. So let's talk about this new trade deal, the greatest trade deal, the U.S. and China.
You know, Trump actually said that. He said the biggest deal anyone has ever seen. Sorry, I can't do that voice. But
the biggest deal that
anyone
has
ever
seen.
It's not, though.
It sounds so like him.
Idiot.
So go on. What is it?
So they've just agreed on what they're going to buy and sell between each other. Obviously, China is committed to supporting the U.S. a bit more from a trade, particularly in agriculture. And I guess the U.S. has said, fine, well, then we won't put higher tariffs on your products.
So in other words, he got them to the table.
Yeah, he got them to the
Let's
table.
Let's just look at this because, you know, a lot of people don't like to acknowledge the fact that China is basically an intellectual property thief. And most of the good ideas that come out of America get retro-engineered into new products in China. And they also, they get ideas from the Koreans and lots of other places. But it's always been that America just bent over and took it from China. And now, because Donald Trump is such a Insert word here, because you can decide whether you think he's a stupid idiot or a brilliant negotiator. The fact is, he's got them to the table. He did threaten to slap huge sanctions on and certainly on tariffs in terms of Chinese products in America, which got the Chinese a little jumpy, right?
Yeah.
And now there's probably a more equitable deal. It may not be the greatest deal in history, like he says, but it sounds like it's a little more equitable.
I don't think it's that clear-cut. I don't think that he's going to slap higher tariffs on Chinese goods and the Americans will import less. I think the American consumer is now paying more for their goods that they import in China. I agree with you, China's a bully and a thief of IP. So what happened 2 years ago when this trade deal came into being is that people stopped trading with each other. You know, we didn't know where the global economy was going. And in fact, economists have predicted that it has wiped off. And we only know this after the fact. Mm. We can only look in hindsight with these sorts of things. It's taken 0.5% off global GDP.
Yeah.
It's taken 0.25% off the Chinese GDP, and I haven't yet seen a figure for the American GDP. I think the only winners here are Trump and Xi Jinping, actually, Mr. Chittal, President Chittal. So, isn't that what?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's go with that for now.
And I think the losers are, in fact, the American companies and consumers, farmers and manufacturers. The winners, I must say, must be countries like us, actually, where China and the U.S. now didn't want to deal with each other, so they sent trade. So trade increased between Mexico, Taiwan, Vietnam, emerging markets probably. We were probably the winners out of all of this, to be honest. So the new deal halves tariff rates on $120 billion worth of goods, but most of the higher duties, which affect another $360 billion of Chinese goods and more than $100 billion worth of U.S. exports, are still in place. So that's not great news for anybody. I think a storm in a teacup is probably what this is all about. And the only people who have come up who have benefited from this are the two presidents who now look like superstars for negotiating a deal.
All right. What about the story that we've been talking about nonstop with Peter Moyo and Old Mutual?
Yes. So a court ruled that Old Mutual now has to give doesn't have to take fired CEO Peter Moyo back. The share jumped 6%.
Right.
We know that. And of course, Peter Moyo, who's fighting for, I believe it's a 30 million rand paycheck, is going to oppose this ruling. And I heard
he's appealing it,
thank you. And his lawyer will start kind of the appeal shortly. But it's such an odd one. You know, if you were the CEO and they fired you and took you to court and a court ruled, surely you just stepped down graciously? Surely nobody wants you there. Go now.
Yeah.
This
is also, it's been dragged out and it's been such an embarrassing thing. And it has affected the share price. And
exactly. Negatively.
It's just horrible.
The share price.
Terrible. And the other big news in the corporate world last week was the CEO of Woolworths stepped down. Mm-hmm. That's Ian Moir. Yeah.
That's right. So Moir had already last year said he was moving to Australia to fix Australia because that's a disaster.
That is the David Jones deal.
That's right.
Which he was responsible for.
Exactly. Which he's already lost 12 billion rand on. And so now they're replacing him as CEO of Woolworths. He will be succeeded by Roy Bagattini, who is in fact South African and currently president of Levi Strauss. Woolworths' share was up 9% when they made this announcement. So I think investors liking this quite a bit. Bagattini's he's got a good retail pedigree. He's been at Carlsberg. He's been at Levi Strauss. And then before that, I'm trying to think, SAB Miller as well.
But Woolworths is generally performed quite well, haven't they?
No, it's struggled. Since the Australian expansion, David Jones, has not done that well.
Food-wise, it's been doing well.
Spot on, yes. So the food has done exceptionally well, even though it's so expensive. They've got their fashion wrong a couple of times in South Africa even. And I think with a competition like Zara, H&M, Mr. Price Clothing, the clothing has struggled a bit. You know, it's not... It's not the place where people go for their standard issue work clothes anymore.
Hmm. All right.
So many retailers in the news, though. Hey? We've also got Massmart.
What about them?
So they said they're closing of their stores, 23 Dion Wyatt stores and 11 Cashmart stores. They're busy consulting with the unions about retrenching 1,400 staff members. And this is the new CEO, Mitchell Slepp. This is kind of his big story, his big first move, if you like. Already, we know Massmart's been in trouble, right? Already last year, they cut their dividend by 40%. Their full-year dividend by 40% and scrapped their interim dividend, and the stock is more than halved over the last 12 months. So it's really a matter of time for survival. You know, we need to do what we need to do to get on with it.
So this isn't necessarily an e-commerce related thing.
I think it is, actually.
Do you?
Yes, I absolutely do. So Dion Wyatt compared to... So how often do you go into Dion Wyatt to buy a cable for your phone or a charger or earphones or whatever it is you need to replace a keyboard? You order it online, don't you?
Yeah, unless I happen to be walking past.
Exactly. This is exactly the place where I think e-commerce will struggle, or where e-commerce will make the bricks and mortar stores struggle, because it's the tech-savvy people that go and shop online.
Yeah. Well, another thing that's worth mentioning here while we're talking about companies, NASPAS, is apparently the CEO, Bob van Dijk, had monetized 1 billion rand. Now, what does that actually mean?
He sold shares to the value of 1 billion rand. He's sitting on 1 billion rand in cash at the
moment. His own shares.
Yes.
Now, normally when a CEO...
comfortable. Feels like silk
normally
on
when
my
a,
bottom.
When a CEO does that, people get a bit nervous.
Absolutely, called it. Yes, so we are a bit nervous. We're very nervous, in fact. He has said that he's planning to reinvest the shares into corporate bonds. And Prosus, which is the company that spun out of Naspers, has raised $1.25 billion, 18 billion rand, through what they call a 10-year bond issue. So it matures in 10 years' time. And he said he would do it in the market, in the open market, which surprises me because, I mean, we'll be watching it. And the great thing about the open market is we can see because he has to list it or the JSE has to list it. So he's saying he's taking out of shares and buying bonds where the yields are better, blah, blah. The interesting thing with Naspers and Prosus at the moment is that they're trading at a huge discount to NAV, net asset value. Mm-hmm. So Naspers is at about a 45% discount to NAV and Prosus at 35%. And we thought, or everyone thought, that when the two companies separated, that this discount would narrow or close and you'd see real value in the Naspers share. All the shareholders in the last, I don't know, 3 years have been calling for Naspers to spin out, you know, kind of, what you call private equity assets, if you like, investments. But it hasn't happened, and I'm not sure why it hasn't happened. I think people are just nervous. And then, of course, with Prosus, there was also the Just Eats deal, which didn't happen. So I can understand why that share has struggled a bit. But if you ask me, I would be holding on to Naspers. It's a huge... 45% is a huge discount to NAV. So basically, think about it this way. If they took the company and completely broke it up and sold it off into its tangible parts, you would get 50% more than what the share is valued. So it makes sense to hold on to Naspers shares until that discount narrows. Unless it trades like an investment holding company, which generally tend to trade at a discount, then it won't narrow to zero or it won't... come to par.
When he sells his shares, mm-hmm. monetizes them. Mm-hmm. I mean, those shares now become available.
Mm. No. Yes. But they're on the market, right?
No, right.
So he was holding them in his personal account, and somebody else has bought them already, actually.
Oh, okay.
So the stock market, there was no market maker for...
There's no bump in the share price.
No. Well, there would have been, because if you're dumping shares into the market... People can just see that happening and wait for a cheaper price. They can see that there's a lot of selling. It does put pressure on the share, but...
A little bit.
Yeah, not... But in Naspers' case, not much, because it's such a huge share, no. Right?
A billion rand is actually not that much money in Naspers.
No.
Wow.
Can't remember what the market
amazing?
Cap is.
That's amazing.
I must have a quick squiz and see what the market cap is.
Just quickly, we've spoken and joked, ha ha ha, so often about the cobalt mines, but Glencore is in talks to supply Tesla with cobalt for its electric cars.
I know, this is very exciting. So they're looking at a long-term contract to ship cobalt to Tesla's new electric vehicle factory in Shanghai, which is where Elon Musk did his little dance 2 weeks ago, I think. The issue with cobalt, of course, that it is mined mostly in politically unstable countries in Africa like the DRC. And I think that cobalt is very small in Glencore's life. It's about 10% of revenue. But the concern, of course, is that Glencore is also under investigation from the Department of Justice in the US and the regulatory body in the UK. And I think partly it's got to do, they haven't said for sure, but we're surmising that it's got to do with the plant in the DRC or these politically unstable countries, where I suspect it's hard to do business without a little bit of a backhand here and a backhand there. So that would be my concern with this deal, but very exciting for Glencore, I think.
All right, and then quickly, something that you'd like to put in as a public service announcement. Can someone please take away Tito Mboweni's Twitter, just like we want them to take away Donald Trump's Twitter? Why do you say this, Anthea?
Because last week, Friday, as I was about to close off for the day, Tito tweeted, and we know he's famous for his tweets about the streets of Kigali and commercializing cannabis, and, you know, he posted this massive bush, cannabis bush, that he had found on his farm, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, Friday afternoon, he tweeted, "Politics and longevity, full stop." Okay, there's a statement for you.
Right.
"Political history shows that overstaying your time in office is bad. Unlike royalty, you may be rejected from State House in an undignified manner. It is good to retire gracefully." And the market went, "Oh, shit, he's retiring."
Mm. Oh, dear.
And then, of course, somebody said to him, "Well, where are you going?" And he went, "What do you mean, where am I going? Why are you resigning?"
Yeah, what's the context?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it a friend of yours?
And then he goes, "Resign from where?" "Oh, Tita, do you not know that you're a public figure and finance minister?" He says, no, "I was referring to heads of state who have overstayed their welcome. Mm. I'm not a head of state." So next time, can you please be less
cryptic?
Puzzling, cryptic.
That's ridiculous.
The Rand lost on that. The Rand lost 7 cents.
Oh, my word.
See, and real world consequences for you having stupid social media account.
Unless he just felt like playing the fool that day and seeing what happened.
Yeah, you don't get to play the fool when you're the finance minister.
Yeah,
I'm
shouldn't
afraid.
Be doing that.
All right, some serious advice from Anthea.
Thanks very much, guys.
Okay, very good. And otherwise, have an excellent week, Anthea. We'll check in with you unless something terrible or brilliant happens.
Oh.
Indeed.
Those are usually our rules.
Can it be something brilliant?
Of course. We'd much prefer that, Sia. Sure.
So.
Calm down. So, all right. If you want to get hold of us, 0797482090. Let us know what you're up to. And if you've just had a brilliant weekend and you feel like boasting, you can do that too. If you want to send us a message about something that's going on in the news, you can do that. And otherwise, we've got a couple of stories we think are going to keep you entertained, interested, amused, and hopefully inspired. All of that's on the way. CliffCentral.com